Welcome to The Doctor Is Out, a podcast hosted by Dr. Sharif Akili, resident physician at Stanford Hospital and investor at Polaris Partners. Join Sharif in exploring the extraclinical practice of medicine as he interviews healthcare leaders who have gone from bedside to build companies, run health systems, spearhead public policy, and pursue many other paths where they lend their unique bedside perspectives.
Our guest today is primary care doctor and founder of MedPage Today's Kevin MD, Dr. Kevin Poe. Today's guest may be well known to many listeners. He's an internal medicine physician, a media commentator who's contributed to the New York Times, CNN, USA Today, and several other news outlets. He's an author, a podcast host, a public speaker, and founder of KevinMD.com, Dr. Kevin Poe. Kevin, thanks for joining me today. I'm excited to learn about your story.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we dig into your background and talk a bit about what you've been up to, can you actually just share for our listeners what Kevin MD is for those who might not know? Probably most people who are tuning in have heard of it, but some may not have.
Sure. Well, I'm Kevin Poe. I'm an internal medicine physician. I practice in Nashua, New Hampshire. So I started Kevin MD back in 2004. And what it is a platform where we can share the stories of the many who intersect with our healthcare system, but are rarely heard from. Now, what exactly does that mean? I find that a lot of the conversations surrounding our healthcare system, it's being done by people who don't necessarily have a personal stake in healthcare. And they're making decisions that personally affect doctors and patients. So I think that we needed a platform where physicians, advanced practice practitioners, patients, and really anyone who don't have a voice in healthcare can have their voice heard. And of course, with the evolution of social media, everyone now can be content producers. So over the last almost 20 years, Kevin MD has evolved into a platform where primary clinicians, but a lot of people who don't have a voice in our healthcare system can get their voice heard. And I've had numerous examples and stories over the years where these voices have made a ripple, have made a huge difference in our healthcare system. So I have KevinMD.com, and it's evolved into various social media branches such as Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And last year, I started a daily podcast where a lot of my guest contributors on KevinMD can really just share their stories in their own words in a podcast like yourself. And it's been an additional gratifying experience. So that in a nutshell is what KevinMD is.
Wow. Have you found that your role as a content producer in the physician community has evolved, especially in the last 2 years with the pandemic and a lot of the challenges with creating trust with the public and particularly trust around information and spreading just truth that is important in saving lives?
Well, as we know, misinformation and disinformation has been in the news, especially with Facebook over the last 1 to 2 years. You have stories about the vaccines, about the pandemic itself, about masks. And we think that disinformation and misinformation has only come into the forefront recently. But in reality, misinformation online has been going on for more than a decade now. And whenever I talk about misinformation online, that's really one of the impetuses of why I continue and why I started Kevin MD, because patients, they're going to go online whether we as clinicians like them to go online or not. If you look at some recent data, like going online to look for health information is the third most popular activity that people use the internet for. And that's only been accentuated, of course, over COVID. So I think that whether physicians like it or not, we do have a somewhat moral responsibility also to get online, either to create content that is reputable or guide patients to better sources of health information. Because if we don't do that, and if we cede that responsibility, you're going to have other pseudo practitioners fill that gap. And unfortunately, over the last couple of years during COVID, we've exactly seen that happen. We've had a variety of misinformation actors use Facebook, use YouTube, use these other social media platforms to peddle false health information. And now we're seeing the public health consequences of that. So if you ask in terms of the evolution of the role of Kevin MD, I think that it's something that I've been doing for years now. But I think that in the context of the current pandemic, I think the responsibilities we have as clinicians to also get online has only grown stronger.
Do you think that you've been able to break through people's echo chambers? You see, we had like Eric Topol, for example, who's a podcast guest earlier, who's also a leading voice in medicine. I feel like he has an enormous Twitter following, but the people who see him sort of already know, or rather, they tend not to be exposed to much misinformation. How have you seen Kevin MD or just content breaking through some of those barriers to influence ears that might be fed this disinformation?
I mean, you bring up a good point. People online, of course, are their own bubbles. We're in our own echo chambers, and you see that certainly in any political topic. You go on Facebook and you only get things from people that you agree with already. So you bring up a good point. But when it comes to people online, I always like to divide them in thirds, right? You're going to have a third of people who agree with everything that you say. You're going to have about a third of people who disagree with everything that you say. And then you have that third of people who are in the middle, who can go either way. So my job being online as a physician isn't necessarily to convince everybody. It's not obviously to convince the people who already agree with me. And it's not to convince the people who disagree with me, no matter what I say. But it's really that middle third who are on the fence in that gray area, who can go either way. So whenever I post something or I try to clear up something or post an article from one of my guest contributors talking about something that is perceived as misinformation, my job is to convince maybe that 10 to 20% who are on the fence and do look to sites like Kevin MD for trusted physician guidance. Because like you said, people are just polarized. People are set in their beliefs and they only find information that reinforce what they already believe in. But I do believe that there is a good 10 to 20% of the population who are persuadable. And that's really the audience that I'm speaking to.
Mm-hmm. How do you set out to build that credibility? Or maybe said another way, do you think that the path of building content is reproducible, similar to any other career path, and physicians who want to be able to contribute to this dialogue can do that? Or is there luck involved in having to be in the right place at the right time that, you know, oftentimes it seems like that can be the case with social media influencers?
So I want to address the first question about credibility. I think that clinicians, we already have credibility, and that's by virtue of our degrees, our MDs and our DOs. And the public, whether we believe it or not, they already have a certain amount of trust in us, in the physician community. So what we normally do, what I think I try to accomplish is we want to extend that credibility. So we're not trying to influence people one-on-one the exam room, but now with these social media platforms, we can influence many to one. So instead of convincing people like I do in my primary care clinic about the virtues of the vaccine, and now I can post stories and experiences from various trusted physician and clinician authors that talk about the vaccine. And I think that for the most part, physicians are respected. You know, I know that there is an increasing distrust in expertise right now. So I think that trust certainly is declining steadily. But by virtue of our degrees, I do believe that there is some amount of baseline trust. Now, to answer your second question in terms of can physicians be influencers using content creation, I think that it is a little bit more difficult now than it was 10 years ago, because now you're just competing with so much other noise that's out there, because everyone can be content creators right now. But I think that, again, because of our expertise, because of our education, because of our degrees, we do stand out. If you have a YouTube channel by a trusted physician, that's something that I think patients pay attention to. So in terms of whether that message can be spread, you know, I think, like I said, more difficult now than it was back then. Sometimes it does require a little bit of luck in terms of having one of your pieces of content go viral. But if you persist and if you have something to say, and especially now with just so much, you know, with the speed of how COVID and COVID vaccine is evolving, I think that there's always going to be a hunger for physician created content and expertise.
Are there any lessons you've discovered over the years in having KevinMD gain traction and be that trusted content source that it's become over the years?
I mentioned a little bit earlier in terms of how expertise and the respect for expertise is being eroded. So I think that we live in a society that's highly politicized. So you're going to have various medical topics that is going to have people who disagree with you no matter what you say, right? You know, just something as simple as wearing a mask, right? That can just evoke such a emotional response from people, or suggesting that people or students wear masks in schools, right? You're just having this huge political fights over that. So it's a little bit disappointing for me to see. And it is a little bit surprising over the years to see how something that is that can be so benign is just so heavily politicized and stokes such emotion. So that is one of the lessons I've learned over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years, is that if you're online, and the more present you are online, you have to develop thick skin. Because if you present an opinion, or if you present a story that is a little bit controversial in just a little bit, then you're going to get a passionate response either way. And you do have to be ready for that.
And, you know, I mean, this podcast called The Doctors Out, it sort of focuses on ways in which you can hybridize your career beyond the clinical practice of medicine. Do you think this role as a content producer is something that you can make a living off of and have, like, could you earn a living salary just on KevinMD and focus on building that and the best it can be if you wanted to? And, you know, it's interesting, like a study came out a couple of years ago, more kids want to be YouTubers than astronauts. Mm-hmm. And the economy is obviously evolving, but I don't think physicians think that way at all. And I don't know if that's really something that, as we were saying earlier, Ken, is like a reliable career path. The way you could pick a specialty may require a little bit of luck. But reflecting back, do you think that this is something that others could pursue as something that can replace a piece of their career and still help them earn a similar standard of living?
So I think if physicians want to venture outside of clinical medicine, they have to do so for the right reason. And that reason isn't necessarily money. If physicians want to make money, they'll just continue practicing medicine, because there is very few avenues in life that reimburses as well as being a physician. So I think that if physicians want to do a proverbial side gig or do something outside of clinical medicine, it's because they have a passion for it. They want to do it for reasons other than money. So I started KevinMD back in 2004, and it wasn't necessarily because I wanted to make money or create a business, but really is I did believe that that physicians needed a platform where you could have a physician editor, where physicians can share their voices and share their stories and share what goes on behind closed doors. Because at that time, and even now, there are very few platforms where physicians can share their stories. You go to mainstream media like the New York Times, and you have physicians who write there, but some of them are just physicians in name only. They don't actually see patients. They're not in the proverbial trenches and experiencing what other frontline clinicians are facing. So I think that we needed a place where physicians can share their stories. And over the years, I have received sponsorships, and it's been a nice way where I can decrease my clinical time and add some variety in terms of what I do with my degree. And that's, for me, very rewarding. But I think that physicians who are thinking about making money as a content creator, I don't think that's the right motivation. It's very difficult to be a content creator these days, because, like I said earlier, there's just a lot of noise that is out there, and it is a grind. Content creation, if you use an analogy, it's like a monster, and you just have to keep feeding that monster. And you see a lot of content creators, some of them make millions of dollars, but for every, you know, Mr. Beast, and for every, you know, YouTuber who makes millions, there's hundreds of thousands more who just burn out from that, because creating content and becoming a platform and relying on a platform for your income is very, very stressful. You're just obsessively watching clicks and page views. And that to me is very stressful. So if someone does want to venture outside of clinical medicine, they have to do so for the right reason. And that reason cannot solely be money.
Yeah, that's very insightful. I've heard a lot about that and how stressful and how much burnout can take place from content creation. And there was a report from the Wall Street Journal recently too that showed they were looking specifically at Twitch and how, what was it, like 0.6%, the top 0.6% or maybe even less than that made enough for the median income of the United States from their Twitch streaming. But you see so many people doing that, and you obviously see the ultra successful people and think that it's easy to just do what they're doing because it seems simple. But that's, you know, important to keep in perspective. What percentage of your time, Kevin, do you spend maintaining, overseeing, and building KevinMD? And what percent of your time do you practice as an internist?
So I practice half-time, 0.5 FTE. And what that means is that I practice 2.5 days in my clinic. I have a primary care clinic, hospital owned in Nashville, New Hampshire. And that to me is very, very gratifying, of course. I think primary care is a very, very difficult job to do full-time. There's just so many responsibilities that are placed on primary care physicians. Not only do you have to see an increasing number of patients, but there, as your listeners well know, there's this increasing amount of bureaucracy, regulations, electronic health record hassles that we have to deal with. And I think that to those primary care physicians who practice full-time, who see 30 to 35 patients a day, you know, more power to them, because that's something I can certainly never do. So I would say it's about half and half in terms of managing KevinMD. Before the pandemic, I would be a speaker as well and travel and share my story and really talk about how physicians can use social media to share their voice, to correct healthcare information, to manage your online reputation. But there hasn't really been any live speaking events for the past couple of years, but hopefully back in, hopefully in 2022, that's going to come again. I also run a physician speakers bureau just because speaking to me is a fascinating hobby. I'm always interested in the art and science of speaking and what makes great speakers. So I do run a bureau of talented physician speakers that events who are interested in having physicians speak at their event, they'll contact me. So that's been a great learning experience as well. And then like you, I'm also a podcaster as well, because during the pandemic, my hours got cut like a lot of primary care doctors, and I had some extra time, and I've always wanted to start a podcast, and it's been a wonderful opportunity. I've been doing it since last June. I've had 500 straight daily episodes.
Oh my gosh. What do you talk about in your podcast?
So my podcast isn't quite as in-depth as yours. It's modeled after the New York Times, The Daily, which is really just 15 to 20 minutes each episode. And I interview KevinMD contributors, and they really share their article, share their story. And my job is really easy. I just sit back, ask questions, and I've learned so much. And I'm talking to all these clinicians and patients and advanced practice practitioners over the last 500 episodes and finding out what they're doing during the pandemic and how they manage burnout and talking about, like you do, what they do with their degree outside of clinical medicine. Because one of the themes on my blog and on my podcast is that doctors are more than their degrees, and exploring what they do with their degrees to me has been tremendously fascinating. But to answer your question, I would say it's half and half. And really, I think it's kept me going. I think I talk to a lot of doctors who just practice 100% primary care, 100% clinical medicine, and they contribute, unfortunately, to the 50%+ doctors who exhibit symptoms of burnout. So I think it's important to have an interest and have a passion outside of the exam room. Now, don't get me wrong. If your passion is clinical medicine and you're all in 100% and that's what fills you with joy, then by all means, go for it. But for the majority of physicians that I've talked to over the past year, there's an increasing level of burnout. And I think one of the best ways to combat that is that you need a passion outside of clinical medicine. I talked to a lot of doctors, you know, who think about just quitting clinical medicine altogether, but I think it's better maybe to cut down a bit, have a little bit of, like you said, hybridization in your professional career where you can recharge, you can renew, you can do something that fills your emotional cup rather than being completely drained in clinical medicine.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what I've been trying to set out to do also is see if there are paths or try to share paths, although sometimes they, with some of our guests, they seem a little bit hard to access, but paths that check the same boxes as picking any specialty. And when I say that in terms of avoiding compromise ideally and being able to earn the same salary and standard of living and providing for your family and stuff. And that requires, I think, a little bit extra creativity and, and oftentimes, and this is just part of life. And this is totally a great part of life too. Is the stuff that nourishes you and re-energizes you is not something you're necessarily going to make money doing either. And that's fine too. You know, I'm actually curious how that I'm mentioning this is, do your patients know what you do? Do they know about your podcast and your content creation?
They do. So I've been doing this since 2004. So I've been doing it for 16, 17 years. So I think when I first did it back in the early 2000s, it was a little bit novel. You know, you had a doctor who blogs and I was written up in various newspapers. And at that time it was a novelty because that, you know, there were probably fewer than 50 to 100 physicians who were actively on social media. But now in 2021, there are tens of thousands of physicians who are on social media, and so many use social media so much better than I do. And I think having a physician with a platform really isn't new to patients anymore. I do have patients who come in and say, you know, I read this article on your blog, I listened to your podcast, and I saw one of your videos, and we, you know, we talk about that. So well, maybe 15, 20 years ago was a novelty, not so much anymore, just because physicians, you know, I think to the profession's credit, we are a little bit more ubiquitous online. And in fact, I think that we need to be even more online. And for physicians, it's important that they start their own platform, you know, not only to actually for the main reason of really sharing their voice and making their voice heard, because the more physicians we have online, the more physicians we have influencing the healthcare conversation, the better that we can protect our profession going forward.
Yeah. And so this actually pivots nicely to a question I had about what you've written out in your book, Establishing, Managing, and Protecting Your Online Reputation. It's a great read. It was written back in 2013. So some of this stuff is a little bit dated, but it really goes nicely into this, just the responsibility or the nuances and role of managing your online presence as a doctor. I was curious, though, after I was reading it and also sort of seeing how things have evolved over the years, where patients less and less pick a doctor and more pick an institution. And maybe in Nashua, that may be a little bit different than these larger, bigger cities that have, like, these health systems that have really consolidated. But and Nashua's a big city, too. But how important do you think it is to actually spend and invest time on reputational presence nowadays compared to before and looking towards the future?
Well, I think it's important before, and I still think it's important now, even if you work for a large institution, because patients not are only going online to research health information, they're of course going online to research their doctors, right? So even if you work for a big organization like Stanford or a major academic medical center, patients are still going to choose doctors within that system and Google their names. And the issue that I find is that whether clinicians know it or not, they already have some type of online presence. You have these third-party companies, you know, Health Grades, Vitals, Doximity, that already create public profiles for these clinicians, right? And sometimes they're filled with third-party patient reviews. So whenever a patient Googles your name, even if you don't want anything online, you already have one regardless. You could, they can go to RateMDs and Health Grades, and they show up first or second on a Google search, and they can have all these third-party page reviews defining your online presence. So one of the things that I talked about in the book and I still talk about now is that physicians, we need to be proactive about our online presence, because if we aren't, someone else is going to do it for us, whether we like it or not. And it's important not only for patients to when they Google you or not, but really just you really should be in control of what's said about you online, because the internet's only going to grow in importance, and I don't think it's going to recede in importance. And if you're defined by third-party reviews online, I think that's only going to be a detriment going forward. So one of the things that, you know, I know that the book was written in 2013 and some of the tools don't exist anymore, but the concept and the principles are the same, is that clinicians need to be proactive about their online presence. And in terms of the time spent, it could range depending on their goals. I think at minimum, they can do something like a LinkedIn profile, and that's really just a transcription of their CV. And LinkedIn itself is ranked pretty high on Google. They can contribute on KevinMD and have author pages where their names would show up pretty high. And these are just ways where they can control what's said about them online. And I always think it's better for you to control what's online rather than having these third parties. And if you want to spend more time managing online presence or building an online platform, that's certainly dependent on your goals. Not everyone has to use social media like I do and create a platform of thousands of physician voices, but it depends on what their goals are. If physicians' goals is patient education and talking about COVID and various issues that arise from COVID, they can go on Facebook and create a Facebook page and help educate patients that way, because patients get a tremendous amount of medical information on Facebook. If clinicians want to talk politics and talk about healthcare policy and be engaged in a public health conversation, they can go on Twitter and create a website and write articles on that. And their public presence will grow based on their goals. But in terms of how big to build an online presence, it really needs to depend on what the physician's goals are. And when they follow those goals, I think that their online presence will grow organically from that.
Do you think that it's also similarly important for inpatient providers, or do you think it's a little different for outpatient providers where patients do tend to pick their providers more often? I ask particularly too, because I've seen, for example, at Stanford, one of my favorite persons who's one of the smartest, most articulate, charismatic internal medicine hospitalists at Stanford. His name is Dr. Errol Esdalga. He has a strong social media presence, and that sort of actually turned more into becoming a voice for the Department of Medicine at Stanford and then reaching the community that way. And it led to an appointment as the Director of Communications for the Department of Medicine. And it seemed to have good synergies with his career. But I wonder if your health system, for example, might, or most health systems might value that, unless somebody is an outpatient provider. I'm curious, actually, if they appreciate all the effort you're doing right now and the work you're doing, and that would be able to provide, I bet, a source of publicity for their referral network.
Yeah. So,
do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all medical centers, hospitals, they really need to encourage their physicians to go online. So the question is whether you want to go online in your own name only or in the name of your institution. And that's certainly dependent on that individual physician and the relationship with the employer. You mentioned about academic promotions based on social media presence. I've absolutely heard of that before. In fact, when you had mentioned that earlier, I pulled up one of the articles from David Stukas. He is a KevinMD contributor. He's a pediatric allergist, and he literally wrote an article on my site, how I use social media to get promoted to professor. And I had him on my podcast, and he really talked about how his social media presence and how some of his viral articles and his Twitter presence and his Facebook presence contributed to the committee's decision to promote them. So I do think that it's encouraging that more academic centers are recognizing the value of social media. They're realizing that publications, if you go to a traditional journal, that sometimes the evolution of medical information can't wait months for your article to be published. Sometimes if you write an article that goes viral within days, that sometimes has more impact than anything that you get published in an academic journal. And the adoption has been slow, but I think that it is encouraging that some academic institutions are recognizing the power of social media and encouraging their physicians to adopt it. Because again, it's all about influence and being where the patients are, because patients aren't going to wait months for a journal article to come out. They're going to want that information now. And the more physicians get online, get on social media and be social media influencers, the more power that they're going to have impacting patient care. And at the end, that's really what it comes down to. That's what we all want. We all want to positively impact patient care.
And it sort of touches upon the earlier point too of how can you do these hobbies that bring you joy and may not necessarily be directly financially sustainable, but in a way be able to still advance your career and secondarily be able to hopefully pay it back in some way. So that's very encouraging. A question I want to ask is a little bit separate topic is, do you have a method, Kevin, of keeping on top of the latest trends? Like, how do you know what to publish as editor-in-chief of Kevin MD? Are there anything, resources that you use or stuff that I use, particularly as an investor, to try to keep on top of certain trends? But do you have a methodology for that and sort of seeing what maybe next within the dialogue of the community?
So one of the things being in medicine, and I'm sure that you and your audience is aware of, is that everything in medicine, we're always a few years behind every other industry, right? So I think that especially with social media, you just look at how other industries have used social media. You know, it could be finance, it could be technology, and inevitably there's a 1 to 2 year or months long lag time before it becomes influential in medicine. So I think in healthcare, things obviously move slowly, and we can use that to our advantage because you could take trends in other industries and apply it to medicine. So that's essentially what I do. So I see how, say, other publications are using social media, how platforms with infinite resources, you know, platforms like the New York Times, people who are on the cutting edge, and how they're using social media, and you apply it to the medical world. You always be ahead of the curve, right? If you do that, because medicine is just so far behind. So that's essentially what I do. So I take note of what entities and other industries are doing, how they're using social media, some of the trends there, and then if you apply it to medicine, you'll be ahead of the curve. So I've done the same with speaking as well, because a lot of grand rounds that I go to, you go to a lot of national conferences, a lot of the physician speakers, you know, no disrespect to them, it's relatively dry. It's just really, you know, they've been doing grand rounds the same way for decades now. But you look at the evolution of speaking, you look at how great these TED Talks are, and how, you know, they can tell a story that's so compelling in 18 minutes. And you look at the visuals that they're using, and you look at the multimedia that people are using as speakers, and then you contrast that to a national conference where, you know, a lot of physician speakers, you know, they just put up like a PowerPoint slide with like 10 points. It's like full of text. You know, this is something from the 1980s, right? So again, you apply how people are speaking, you apply techniques in other industries, and then you do it in medicine, and people will say, oh my gosh, you're so ahead of the curve. And it's really no big secret, because medicine is so static, it's so inert. And, you know, any type of innovation from other industries you introduce and you introduce it to medicine, people will be just blown away about how innovative you are, but it's really not.
Is there an area you've been publishing on most recently or finding yourself, maybe it's just COVID, but everything's COVID these days, but is there something interesting you've been focusing on or working on most recently?
Yeah, so let's put COVID aside, because that's obviously been taking up a lot of the content over the last couple of years. But I think it's what I alluded to earlier. I think the doctors are more than their degrees, and similar to what you're doing on this podcast, and this is what I try to illuminate on my own podcast as well, is that the traditional role of a doctor is changing. You know, and this is a point that I do want to emphasize to your medical student and resident listeners, is that the definition of what we think a doctor is no longer, it's changing, right? We don't have to, you know, because I think that that's a difficult concept for some people to grasp, because a lot of doctors, it's kind of a pretty linear path, right? You know, you do well in high school, then you go to 4 years undergrad and 4 years medical school, 3 to 5 years residency, get a job as an attending. And, you know, it's very fairly linear, right? But I think that our degrees has opened up so many doors for us today, right? So you talk about what we could do also the exam room. Like, I'm a content creator, but if you go to Nisha Mehta's Physician Side Gigs Facebook group, and you'd have so many other doctors doing things outside of clinical medicine. Wonderful. Yeah, she's a great friend of mine. She's also my speakers bureau, so I definitely admire what she's done in terms of creating her own platform. But she's really highlighted what clinicians can do with their degrees. You know, real estate. A lot of them go into coaching. And you know, I've had doctors become chefs. I had a doctor who quit medicine and became a high school science teacher. And it's just like, it needs to, physicians need to realize that our traditional roles our traditional role as a physician is changing, and we could be so much more than our degree. And that's the definitely one thing that I want to emphasize during the show.
Do you think that's in part because of the consolidation that's taking place in the healthcare space? Like, why is that? I mean... I have certain thoughts on it, but why do you think? I'll share Sarah my reflections afterwards.
Yeah, the bottom line is a loss of autonomy, right? So everyone says, oh, why are physicians so burned out? You know, why is 50% of doctors exhibiting burnout? And people say, oh, is it, you know, they're not having enough yoga classes, they need to practice their resiliency and all that stuff that a lot of institutions try to place. You know, do we need more relaxation time and, you know, stuff like that. But really the bottom line that when it comes down to it is really physicians are faced with a loss of autonomy. And that comes, like you said, from consolidation. You know, you have more algorithmic based approaches. You have electronic medical records where physicians spend, you know, for every 1 hour they spend with patients, they spend another 2 hours on EHRs. You have a compensation that's being tied with productivity. So I think a lot of the autonomy that physicians traditionally had is lost. And that's really the root cause for the increasing burnout that they have. So that's why you're seeing a lot of physicians maybe back off from clinical medicine, where they lose that autonomy and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to invest in real estate. I'm going to manage properties. I'm going to start being a content creator. I'm going to go on TikTok and create videos. I'm going to become a chef and become an author. I'm going to write and do things that really fill my emotional cup, because honestly, that's something they want to do. It's a passion. It's something that they have autonomy over, and that loss of autonomy that they're getting from clinical medicine contributes to burnout. So they got to fill their emotional cup in other ways. So my ideal is a blend. And, you know, I think that some physicians have retreated completely from clinical medicine, but I'm in a good spot where I do have that 50-50 blend of seeing patients, because you go into medicine because you want to take care of patients, and patients need primary care doctors. So I do that. I don't know if I can do that full time, but it really keeps me connected with clinical medicine. But then I have such a variety of other things outside of clinical medicine that I do with my degree, you know, whether it's KevinMD.com, speaking, the podcast, and managing the speakers bureau and things like that. And that to me has been so interesting in the different ways that I've used my degree. And I can never go back to being a full-time primary care doctor, because there's so many other things that are out there that I could do with a doctor's degree.
Yeah. Very well said. Very well said. Well, for my last question, I wanted to ask Kevin, it's a tradition we have that we ask all our guests this, which is simply if we ask if you've encountered anything, a source of content maybe that you've enjoyed recently. It could be a book, an article, a TV show, a song, a movie, another podcast. Is there anything you came across recently you found compelling that you might recommend to the listeners to check out?
So I am currently reading Seth Wickersham's book, ESPN author, It's Better to Be Feared. I'm a New England Patriots fan, of course, living in New Hampshire. And over the last 20 years, you follow the roots of Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Bob Kraft, and the secrets to their success behind how the New England Patriots won 6 Super Bowls. So that is something I'm currently reading. I'm always interested in hearing greatness in other fields and what motivates them. And it goes back to what I said before about how you could apply lessons in other fields to medicine. You know, how can being a great quarterback or a great coach and what drives them, and use some of the things that they use into what I'm doing on Kevin MD, because I don't think it's easy. There's no real manual to do this. And a lot of it is a grind, right? Just creating content, doing a podcast every day. And of course, I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it, but I'm not going to shy away from the fact that it's also pretty hard work, right? It's not really for everyone. So I'm currently reading that book, and it's just really been inspiring, learning about how great leaders in other areas, in this case, football, and applying those lessons to what I do with Kevin MD in medicine.
Yeah, I really like that a lot. I couldn't agree more. I think there's a lot for medicine to learn from areas outside of medicine and vice versa, of course. So the book was called what again? It's Better to Be Feared, yeah?
It's Better to Be Feared by Seth Wickersham. So I'm currently reading that, yes.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That does it for this episode of The Doctor's Out. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support us, please leave a review on Apple Podcast or whichever podcast platform you use. And if there's something you found you really liked or didn't like or would like to make a suggestion, feel free to reach out by email at info@tdio.org.